You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is questions. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy! At last, everything is done for you.
Welcome. You are listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm your host, Chris Switzer. You can find my work, as always, till it's not there, I guess, on BitChute, www.bitchute.com/The Freedom Ministry. Check it out. If you haven't already, you're going to see a lot of content. Uncensored. Raw. I try my best on this radio program and in my video content to bring you the truth without an agenda. Unless you want to call that agenda truth, then okay, guilty as charged. But I'm not trying to fit things, because I know how that works, because I've done that, like, you know, long time ago. I grew up a heathen. I grew up a liar. I grew up a cheat. I wasn't a godly person. I didn't grow up like that. You know, I had to hit a bottom and repent. I was convicted of my sin so deeply. And, you know, I wept like a baby. I'm not ashamed to say it. When I realized what it was to be saved, it came over me all at once, seemingly. I remember where I was, what was happening. I couldn't tell you the day of the week or even, you know, the month and day, but I remember where I was, what I was doing vividly. And I say that to any new listener who might be jarred or shocked by something you might hear on this broadcast. Anything I say can be validated in sources. And if it isn't, I will say this is conjecture, I've heard this, this is hearsay, rumor at this time, you know, something like that. I'm just bringing you some news or something that I heard. I read to you the book Kill the Best Gentiles by James W. von Brunn, which I'm sure a lot of people thought was pretty extreme, radical. But you can take that stuff to the bank. You know, we're creatures built on genetic code, our makeup. And as such, we're not all the same. It's just the way it is. We're different. We're unique. We're special. Everybody is unique. And the book that I'd like to get into, you folks, is another one that's pretty, you know, it would be called Radical. It's revisionist history. And it's titled Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. It's written by Thomas Goodrich. And there's an hour and a half documentary made on the book that's hosted on my BitChute channel if you'd like to watch it after the broadcast. It's brilliant. And if you don't know the revisionist history of Nazi Germany, you're in for a treat. But it's also very sad. It's very sad to learn what happened to Germany and its people who lived in that country. To the voiceless victims of the world's worst war. The table of contents, Hell from Above, The Dead and the Dead to Be, Between Fire and Ice, Crescendo of Destruction, The Devil's Laughter, The Last Bullet, A Sea of Blood, Unspeakable, A War Without End, The Halls of Hell, Crime of the Age, and The Epilogue, of Victors and Victims. And it includes a bibliography and an index. Well, well researched, well written, with illustrations as well. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Get right into it with the prologue. On the night of October 20th, 1944, the village of Nemersdorf lay mantled in sleep. Dark and still, only the twinkling of street lamps suggested life in the tiny town. It was now the sixth autumn of the war. The once mighty German nation teetered at the brink. Her cities lay in ruins. Her industry had been shattered. Her economy was on the verge of collapse, and worse, the Allied armies of the world were locking a death grip on the very borders of the Reich itself. No one with eyes to see or mind to think could doubt that utter defeat was not only certain, but imminent. And yet, the village of Nemersdorf slept. For 6 years now, the Third Reich had been mortally engaged in the most violent, cataclysmic war the world had ever known. Millions of Germans were already dead. Millions more were crippled or maimed. Many others who had survived intact were staggering towards starvation. And yet, Nemersdorf slept. The children of the village lay snug, warm, and seemingly secure beside their mothers, as they always had, and as they imagined they always would. In the bedrooms below, grandfathers, now the only men remaining, coughed quietly in the night, then rose from time to time, as they always had, for a cup of water, a glass of schnapps, or perhaps a quiet moment's draw on the pipe. Just beyond, in the barns that adjoined most homes, milk cows rustled softly among the hay and fodder. In the dark village square, the old town clock patiently told the passing hours as it had night after night, year after year, century after century. Outwardly, at least, and despite a world engulfed in smoke and flame, nights in Nemersdorf passed peaceful, predictable, as they always had. But that was about to change. All was about to be violently swept away forever. The war, like a wall of angry red lava, was rushing down on the sleeping hamlet and was only moments from arrival. For 600 years, East Prussia had served as the frontier outpost of Germany. Jutting eastward into often hostile Slavic lands, The old Teutonic province, unlike the rest of Germany, had faced a host of real or potential enemies for the entirety of its long existence. As a consequence, a strong military tradition had developed. It was here, in the breadbasket of Germany, a fertile plain of large estates and proud noble families, that much of the leadership for the German army, past and present, had come. Thus, it was with no small amount of irony that, despite its martial reputation, East Prussia was one of the few spots in Germany that had not been devastated by the current war. While the rest of the Reich's urban centers had long since been reduced to smoking rubble, the cities and towns of East Prussia, beyond the range of Allied bombers, remained for the most part untouched. Although the unscathed condition of the province was envied elsewhere in Germany, Prussians, especially those nearest the eastern frontier, knew better than most that the war was reaching its climax. Each day, the rumble to the east grew more distinct. Each night, the red glow on the horizon throbbed more angrily. By mid-October 1944, the Soviet army had finally reached the Reich's border. And yet, as was the case at Nemersdorf, there was no panic. As a dedicated National Socialist, as a fanatical follower of Adolf Hitler, it was Erich Koch's duty as district chief of East Prussia to hold the line, no matter the cost. With the battered and bleeding remnant of the German Wehrmacht now fighting desperately on the nation's eastern approaches, Koch was determined to stamp out all forms of panic and defeatism among the populace. Except for a 5-mile buffer directly behind the front, the district leader forbid any and all attempts at flight or evacuation. Civilians disregarding the order faced summary execution. Moreover, any manifestation of panic, withdrawal of bank funds, slaughtering farm animals, packed luggage, could bring down the death penalty. No true German would allow himself even the thought that East Prussia might fall into Russian hands, the Nazi diehard announced menacingly. While Koch's threats and irony were no doubt needed to bolster some nervous Prussians, for the most, it was not necessary. Hopeless debacle that the war had become, faith in the fatherland, and trust that the beleaguered Wehrmacht would hold, yet against the East Wall, against the Red Tide, predominate. As was the case during the First World War, there was a general feeling that this war too, the front would stabilize on the frontier, and the Russians would be ground down through attrition. Concerning the rumors of Bolshevik bestiality and the horrible hints of what might be expected should the Asiatic hordes overrun Germany, most Prussians only laughed. Such notions, many felt, were merely the government's attempt to harden their will to resist. Thus it was that on the night of October 20th, as Nemersdorf and other communities nearest the front slept in imagined security, the unthinkable occurred. After punching a hole through the German line, the Red Army suddenly burst into the Reich. Within hours, the Soviets widened the gap and swarmed over the countryside. After several days of desperate fighting, the Wehrmacht regrouped, launched a furious counterattack, then eventually drove the Russians back to Boston. What German troops found upon reclaiming the lost ground, however, was staggering. Quote, "They tortured civilians in many villages," end quote, reported one German officer, "nailed some on barn doors and shot many others. Along the roads, treks of fleeing refugees had been overtaken by the communists, the people pulled from their carts, then raped and murdered on the spot." It was at Nemersdorf, though, where stunned soldiers first viewed hell on earth. Recorded a physician with the army, Lieutenant Heinrich Hamburger, quote, "On the road through Nemersdorf near the bridge, I saw where a whole trek of refugees had been rolled over by Russian tanks. Not only the wagons and teams, but also a goodly number of civilians, mostly women and children. They had been squashed flat by the tanks." At the edge of the road and in the farmyards lay quantities of corpses of civilians who evidently had been murdered systematically. Added another horrified witness, quote, in the farmyard further down the road stood a cart to which four naked women were nailed through their hands in a cruciform position. Beyond stood a barn, and to each of its two doors a naked woman was nailed through the hands in a crucified posture. In the dwellings we found a total of 72 women, including children and one old man, 74, all dead, all murdered in a bestial manner, except only a few who had bullet holes in their necks. Some babies had their heads bashed in. In one room, we found a woman, 84 years old, sitting on a sofa, half of whose head had been sheared off with an axe or a spade. Quote, every female, including girls as young as 8, had been raped, noted another viewer. Old men who had feebly tried to protect their wives, daughters, and granddaughters were themselves knocked down and sawed in half or chopped to bits. A group of over 50 French POWs and Polish workers who had instinctively stepped in to protect the people were likewise castrated, killed. Lieutenant Amberger continues. On the edge of a street, an old woman sat hunched up, killed by a bullet in the back of the neck. Not far away lay a baby of only a few months, killed by a shot at close range through the forehead. A number of men with no other marks or fatal wounds had been killed by blows with shovels or gun butts, their faces completely smashed. In the nearby villages, similar cases were noted after these villages were cleared of Russian troops. Neither in Nemersdorf nor in other places did I find a single living German civilian. That's the Bolsheviks, guys. The same faction is in control of these Western civilized countries today. I digress. Staggered by the enormity of the crime, German authorities requested that neutral investigators and medical personnel from Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland view the sickening carnage close up. When the visitors filed their reports, however, and when word finally reached out to the outside, there was only silence. By the winter of 1944, the vicious propaganda war waged against Germany had been won. By that late stage of the conflict, the war of the words had reached such hideous extremes that few individuals beyond the Reich's borders were concerned about brained German babies or crucified German women. By the final months of the war, the enemy to be destroyed was not merely Adolf Hitler, the Nazi part, or even the soldiers in the field. By the end of the war, the aim of the approaching Allies was nothing less than the utter extinction of the German nation, including every man, woman, and child. In his 1925 political testament, Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler laid out in unmistakable terms his plan to rid Germany of all Jewish influence, economic, political, and cultural, should he ever someday rise to power. When that seeming fiction became fact 8 years later and Hitler was elected chancellor to one of the mightiest industrial giants on earth, alarmed Jews worldwide declared war on Germany. Fearful lest Nazism spread and jeopardized their hard-won position around the globe, influential Jews met in July 1933 at Amsterdam to invoke global economic sanctions against Hitler's Germany. The campaign, said boycott organizer Samuel Untermeyer of the United States, was a holy war, a war that must be waged unremittingly against a veritable hell of cruel and savage beasts. As a consequence, Germans responded in kind with a boycott of their own. While citizens were encouraged to shun Jewish businesses, a series of laws were enacted designed to not only drive Jews from German arts, media, and the professions, but to force them to as well.
A special bulletin.
We'll be right back.
America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives?
I have another update on the fundraising situation. We can accept PayPal through the RBN site. You can mail in cash, check or money order, made out to RBN. Made out to RBN. The postal address is 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. If you send in a check or money order, it needs to be made out to RBN, just the three letters, RBN. And if you have any questions, call 800-724-2719, extension 3. Feel free to call on in on this issue, and we'll try and get you squared away. The network thanks you.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up.
Welcome back. You're still listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm your host, Chris Switzer. I was reading from the book Hellstorm. Before I jump back into it, though, if you have any comments or questions, like to add anything to the program, please call in. This is your show. 512-248-8252. Or you can call toll-free, 800-313-9443. I'm going to jump right back into the reading of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944-47, by Thomas Goodrich. As the economic struggle continued, Jewish journalists, writers, playwrights, and filmmakers around the world joined the fray. With the outbreak of war in 1939 and the entry of the United States into the conflict 2 years later, the war of words reached pathological proportions. Increasingly, as rumors of savage persecution against Jews under Nazis' control spread, the propaganda campaign directed at Hitler and fascism devolved swiftly into a fanatical cry of extermination. Nowhere was hatred more intense than among American Jews, wrote Hollywood scriptwriter and director Ben Hecht, quote, "A cancer flourishes in the body of the world and in its mind and soul. And this cancerous thing is Germany, Germanism, Germans. I read in their watery eyes, their faded skins, their legs without feet, and their thick jaws, the fulfillment of a crime and the promise of another. The German hates democracy because he does not like himself. He has only one political ideal. It is based on his fat neck, his watery eyes, and his faded skin. He is a pure murderer. The thought of killing defenseless people brings a glow into his fat German neck. The Germans outraged me because they are murderers, foul and wanton, and because they are fools, such as gibber at a roadside with spittle running from their mouths. They outraged me because they raised their little pig eyes to their betters and sought to grunt and claw their way to the mastery of men. That this most clumsy of all human tribes, this leaden-hearted German, should dare to pronounce judgment on his superiors, dare to outlaw from the world the name of Jew, a name that dwarfs him as the tree does the weed at its foot, is an outrageous thing. It is an evil thing." End quote. Quote, "Germany must perish," echoed Theodore N. Kaufman in a widely read book of the same name. Quote, "This time Germany has forced a total war upon the world. As a result, she must be prepared to pay a total penalty. And there is one and only one such total penalty. Germany must perish forever. In fact, not in fancy. The goal of world dominion must be removed from the reach of the German, and the only way to accomplish that is to remove the German from the world. There remains then but one mode of ridding the world forever of Germanism, and that is to stem the source from which issue those war-lusted souls by preventing the people of Germany from ever again reproducing their kind." End quote. To implement his plan, Kaufman recommended that when the war was successfully concluded, all German men and women should be sterilized. Sound familiar? The result, wrote the author, would be the elimination of Germanism and its carriers. Far from being shocked by such a genocidal scheme, leading American journals were thrilled by the concept. "A sensational idea," cheered Time magazine. "A provocative theory," echoed the Washington Post. While many in America and Great Britain could understand and even commiserate Jewish emotions, many more were initially aghast by the flaming rhetoric and the murderous cries for extermination of innocent and guilty alike. Nevertheless, the sheer weight and persistence of the propaganda, both subtle and overt, in film, radio, books, magazines, and newspapers, gradually worked its way into the thoughts and attitudes of the public mainstream. Eventually, in the minds of a sizable percentage of Americans and Britons, little distinction was drawn between killing a Nazi soldier and killing a German child. On September 15, 1944, President Franklin Roosevelt made the demand for extermination official when he endorsed the so-called Morgenthau Plan. We learned about that in the previous book. Named for Roosevelt's Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, but actually conceived by the Secretary's top aide, Harry Dexter White, both of whom were Jewish, the program called for the complete destruction of Germany after victory had been won. In addition to the dismantling or destruction of German industry and the permanent closure of mines, the Morgenthau Plan called for a reduction of the Reich's land area by one half. As many calculate, and as Roosevelt, General George C. Marshall, and other proponents of the plan well knew, this act guaranteed that roughly two-thirds of the German population, or 50 million people, would soon die of starvation. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back.
Proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question! The comfort you've demanded is now
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth! You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store. Or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt.
Freedom Ministry. I'm your host, Chris Switzer. We're reading from Hellstorm, and I'm going to jump right back into it. The Death of Nazi Germany, 44 to 47, by Thomas Goodrich. I'm going to reread that last sentence before the break. As many calculated, as Roosevelt, General George C. Marshall, and other proponents of the plan well knew, this act guaranteed that roughly two-thirds of the German population, or 50 million people, would soon die of starvation. That's the Morgenthau plan. With the remnant of the population reduced to subsistence farming, and with the shrunken nation totally at the mercy of hostile European neighbors, it was estimated that within two generations, Germany would cease to exist. Quote, they have asked for it, snapped Morgenthau when someone expressed shock at the plan. Why the hell should I worry about what happens to their people? You don't want the Germans to starve, Roosevelt's incredulous son-in-law asked the president in private. Why not? Replied Roosevelt without batting an eye. Another advocate of the plan was Winston Churchill. Let's pray. Despite his earlier protest of the scheme as cruel and unchristian, the British Prime Minister's attitude soon softened. Millions of dollars in much-needed lend-lease supplies and equipment were dangled before him by the Americans. Unlike Roosevelt, Churchill's endorsement of the Morgenthau Plan was little known in the Prime Minister's home country. Even had the plot been common knowledge, however, it likely would have caused hardly a ripple in a nation that had been locked in war with evil for 5 years, and where much anti-German propaganda from the First World War was still warmly embraced. Quote, "One can't think of anything bad enough for the diseased Germans," hissed an English housewife. "They are like loathsome disease spreading and spreading over Europe," added a British naval officer. Quote, "Twice running, they had been the criminals who had turned Europe into a slaughterhouse. Their present leader was a bloodthirsty gutter snipe. They themselves must bleed and burn, and there were no lengths in violence to which the British would not go to destroy their wicked power. Germans were first cousins to the devil. The population of the British Isles had been worked up by propaganda to a state of passionate hatred of the Nazi Party, the German armed forces, and the German people. They had been told repeatedly that the only good German was a dead one. Curiously, the genocidal agreement, so recently made official by the Western democracies, had long since been state policy in communist Russia. There, because of the massive deaths and destruction caused by the German invasion in 1941, as well as the great number of Jews who perished as a consequence, it was guaranteed Germany would receive no mercy should the Red Army ever gain the upper hand. Perhaps the most influential Jewish writer anywhere in the world was the Soviet, Ilya Ehrenberg. Unlike Morgenthau, White, Hecht, Hoffman, and others who aimed to influence men in high places, Ehrenberg lowered his sights on the common Red soldier himself, or those most likely to encounter German civilians. Whether in the columns of the Moscow Daily, such as Pravda or Izvestia, or whether in the frontline soldier's newspaper, Red Star, whether in mass distribution leaflets dropped from planes on the front, or whether in his book, The War, Ehrenberg urged the Red Army forward with a cry of total, complete, and utter extermination. Quote, "The Germans are not human beings. If you have not killed at least one German a day, you have wasted that day. If you cannot kill your German with a bullet, kill him with your bayonet. There is nothing more amusing for us than a heap of German corpses. Do not count days, count only the number of Germans killed by you. Kill the German. That is your grandmother's request. Kill the German. That is your child's prayer. Kill the German. That is your motherland's loud request. Do not miss. Do not let through. Kill. Kill. Red Army men, kill. No fascist is innocent. Be he alive. Be he as yet unborn." End quote. In public, Russian Premier Joseph Stalin sought to distance himself from such sentiments. Quote, "Sometime we hear silly talk about the Red Army intending to exterminate the German people and to destroy the German state," smiled the Soviet dictator with an eye to the world. "This is, of course, a stupid lie. But if Joseph Stalin dismissed Ehrenberg's bloodthirsty words as silly talk, his soldiers did not. Already bursting with hatred and revenge, such admonitions from sanctioned individuals writing in official Soviet organs lent an air of legality to those already eager to act out their own savage fantasies. Quote, "There will be no mercy for no one," grimly warned one Russian commander. "It is pointless to ask our troops to exercise mercy. The land of the fascists must be made a desert." End quote. Most Germans actually knew little of thoughts such as those above. Most Germans were yet living under the illusion that the war still had rules. They still followed the Geneva Convention, folks. Few could bring themselves to believe that the horror at Demmersdorf was anything other than an aberration, that the butchery was only a bloody mistake destined never to be repeated. Unbeknownst to those in Prussia and other German regions facing east, the nightmare at Demmersdorf would soon prove only the faintest foretaste of what was ahead. Meanwhile, as Russian pressure in the east grew ever more menacing further west, Soviet allies were already engaged in their own brand of extermination. Here in its western and central provinces, Germany was within easy striking distance of enemy bomber fleets. Here, the United States, especially Great Britain, seemed determined to make atrocities attributed to the Nazis seem like child's play by comparison. Unlike the war further east, here in western Germany, hell came not from the ice and mud below, but from the clouds and heavens above. Chapter 1. Hell from Above. On the night of July 24th, 1943, air raid sirens sounded in Hamburg for the 100th time. No city the size of this great German port could hope to escape for a long and major European war, and Hamburg had not. I'm going to take a first caller here. We have James holding from Vancouver on line one. Hey, James.
Yes, good morning.
Hello?
Yes, hello. And can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, and ironically, now everyone has to take the shot and die. Don't you find that ironic?
Yeah. it's not lost on me.
While you're talking about that, you could also mention all of the science and technology that was stolen from Germany as a result of the unconditional surrender. Specifically, I could mention the lost secret German cure for cancer. The lost secret German cure for cancer. If you Google that, you'll see the book I wrote about the whole thing.
Very interesting.
There's a cure for cancer. It was invented in Germany in the 1930s. And, everybody got the jet fighters from Germany. Everybody got the missiles, the V-2 rockets. Everybody got the, even the bear aspirin, they took that. They took the bear aspirin, which was invented in 1902. Actually, originally, it was invented as a heart medicine, not a headache medicine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, that was given over, and finally, Bayer got the aspirin back in 1989 at the end of the Cold War. So all of these things that you're talking about were planned long before probably the war even started.
Because, yes.
The U.K., and their bankers, and the United States and their bankers, knew very well that Germany was could outthink and outproduce the rest of the world in science and technology. But one specific example is quantum mechanics, which was almost wholly invented inside Germany. And at the time of 1925, 1926, and after 1926, all of the American physicists had to go to Germany to learn quantum mechanics because nobody in the United States knew it. And
how about that?
Yeah, and you'll see this in science as science has evolved. And the people talk about scientific knowledge and what have you. And they have all these little tricks they use to hide the truth of who invented what. See? I have a German background. I have a German name, okay? And now, as I was growing up, especially when I went to university, I could feel the pressure because of my name, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm out in public, I pass for a Jew. Well, that's because there are Jews in my family, right? They're not practicing Jews. They're what's called a converso, which means they were once Jews, but they became Catholics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather was in World War I, and he fought for the Austrian army. in the cavalry, okay? And after after 1918, the Treaty of Versailles, all of the land that my grandparents had lived on in Hungary was handed over to Romania. And so they left what was once Hungary, a certain province, and they went to Ellis Island. Had to stay there 90 days because my aunt had a fever in Paris. And then they went to Canada. And so my family has been through this whole thing,
sure.
This whole ordeal. Now, just to top it off, I got one more point, and then I'm going to, I got to know some very high-level British officers in Hong Kong in the 1990s, okay? These were commandos in Force 136. This one particular gentleman, I became very close friends with him. He ended up in Palestine from 1945 to 1948 to handle the insurgency, call it that, right? Then after that, he was in the Malayan Emergency, the top level organizer of the Malayan Emergency, right? So around 1995, we had talked about wars many times, but finally, 1995, he said, "Well, I'm leaving Hong Kong," and I said to him, "I said, well, I guess you'll be going back to England." And he looked at me square in the eyes and he said, "I'll never live in that bloody country again."
Huh.
Now, this gentleman had fought in Burma, the Japanese, okay, until 1945. He'd been through the Palestine ordeal. And I remember looking at me straight in the eyes with his British friends looking at me saying, "Yeah, and I lost a lot of mates in the King David Hotel." All right?
Sure.
I'm getting this from the horse's mouth, okay? I mean, sure. I'm young compared to this guy. This guy passed away already, and I was not in World War II, okay, obviously. But they were talking about Churchill, okay? And these British officers were sitting around drinking, and they hated that guy, all right?
Yep.
Right.
I knew you were going to say that.
The upshot of it was that these guys were saying, you know, we never really had to have that war with Germany. Right.
Yep.
And I remember him coming down from the he lived in the top part of the apartment. He came down. He said, "You know, I just listened to a speech by Hitler." I said, "What?" He said, "Yes." He said, "It was a very good speech." So this British officer.
Indeed.
Had learned to speak German, had learned to about German culture, and because these guys would get together and they would talk about how they got lied to from the British government in order to do somebody else's dirty work, you see.
That's right.
And, this is how it goes. And, lives get destroyed, we have to take the shot, you see. So we have to...
Yeah, look at Austria, right?
Yeah, well, you see, there is something going on here, anti-human agenda. And obviously it's been there for a long time. There's people out there that simply care more about their money or their power or something like that than people, you see. And I just wanted to call you up, and I've listened to your program before, and I have a friend here. He was in the Hitler Youth. He's 93 years old, going on 94. Mm-hmm. And every time we talk, of course, we're talking about the war. We're talking about what happened to Germany, and there's many complicated issues. And but I'm interested. you know, thank you for your program. And I just wanted to, one more thing. One of the reasons why Germany was so angry, and this I got from my British officer friend, one of the reasons why Germany was so angry after World War One was in the Treaty of Versailles, they got their coal taken away. Their coal. Yep. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, don't you understand? He said, they were freezing for years in the winter. They didn't have any coal.
Mm-hmm.
And they were burning all kinds of things in the 1920s to keep warm, you see? Because yep. France had taken the coal, right? And so this is how it goes, you see. And because I was naive when I talked to this British guy 30 years ago. Anyway, I'll let you go. We'll talk again.
I appreciate the call, James. And we'll be right back.
Yep. Thank you. Bye now.
Without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now...
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up.
We're back. You're listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. Just want to thank the previous caller for calling in. Thank you, James. Anybody that would like to call in, please feel free. Again, toll free, 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. I want to make sure that our people are educated. And instead of getting propaganda and half-truths, which is just poison, you know, you wouldn't drink coffee with 10% cyanide, would you? So why do you take your news and your reports that way? Information should be no different. You want the truth, unadulterated. And that's what that gentleman was calling and talking about. Those British officers knew they were lied to by their command. They hated Churchill. The German officers didn't hate Hitler. The German people, by and large, adored Hitler. It's totally different, folks. History has been totally debauched, perverted, and spewed back to us, regurgitated in some Bolshevik Zionist fashion. It's not true. And he brought up the King David Hotel bombing, where his British officer friends lost, you know, mates. They lost comrades, friends, maybe family. And that was a terror attack. A Jewish-Israeli terror attack by the Jewish militia, which today literally became their army, the Israeli Defense Force. And to show you how ingrained it is in their culture in Israel to be an Israeli Jew today, they celebrate that. They celebrate the King David Hotel bomb, where they took out leadership of the British mandate, the British occupation in Palestine, because they wanted it for themselves, obviously. And one of those involved in that terror attack, that massacre on civilians and soldiers alike, was the sixth prime minister of Israel. He was wanted for terrorism at the time, plastered up on, you know, walls, searching for the man, wanted, money rewards. I'm talking about Menachem Begin, the sixth prime minister to Israel, a proud Bolshevik, just like its first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. They're terrorists. They're proud of it. It made headlines all over the world. Terrorists blow up Palestine headquarters, 93 dead and missing in Jerusalem. What they did is they dressed like Arabs, you know, with the hats and scarves, and they had explosives. They went into the King David Hotel, and they set up all the explosives at the key structural points to bring it down. And sure enough, they did. And to this day, when speaking or recollecting the events, those who survived and were still alive up until recent times to talk about it on video, they're giddy when describing it. They speak of how they brilliantly did it, you know, and deceived the Brits and blew it up. Because all that matters to them is Israel. Their vision of Israel. Zionism. And that's what it is. It's the Argon that was the Jewish militia group that Menachem Begin was a part of. And they were affiliated with the Haganah paramilitary group. And those two groups joined forces and became the IDF, Israel Defense Force, their army today. And guess where our police go for training? You guessed it, the IDF. And what government paid over $50 million for a compound city replicating an Arab city right in the Negev Desert in Israel? The United States. We are controlled by Israel today. It's a sad, cold fact. And that's why Israel was gifted. It was gifted to the powerful Jewish influences before, well before World War II. You know, the Balfour Declaration.